Well, peace about everyone, and welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. We've got James Kirk and Larry. Hi, guys.
Happy Shabbat. How's
it going? It was fun doing the program. Well, I guess it wasn't really fun, but it was certainly enlightening doing the program observations with you guys a week ago. The summation of that, Kirk, is that the Woodrow Wilson administration, President of the United States Woodrow Wilson, the Princeton professor and president, who became president of the United States by deceiving America, telling America that he was going to do exactly the opposite of what he did. The man that started the Federal Reserve and the federal income tax, and who deliberately engaged America in World War I to benefit banks, one bank in particular, that the J.P. Morgan's banks, there is ample evidence actually conceived the toxic biological weapon that wiped out between 40 and 100 million people worldwide. It was called the Spanish flu. It had nothing to do with Spain.
No.
It wasn't even a flu. It was very similar to today's anthrax, the virus that was caused by it. And there is a significant amount of evidence that the disease was originally created by an American-German individual and tested in America's National Guard along the border, where it killed, incapacitated 90% of the men and horses, and noticed by the Americans, obviously, devastating, particularly since horses were the primary weapon of war.
Mm-hmm.
The United States, this would have been in 1913, refined the delivery agent. We had a biological warfare department at the time. We also had a department of propaganda that conceived America as the center of God's agenda, and the all of America's foes is unworthy to live. The propaganda that has part of the U.S. government has maintained itself ever since. And that that disease that was planted among the troops that rallied to go to war after Woodrow Wilson deliberately arranged to have the Lusitania sunk. And he infested Americans with the disease in the recruiting centers and training centers in Kansas. Now, whether or not it was a biological agent designed by America, which there's ample evidence for, Kirk, that you found, or it's the agent, the biological agent that was jointly developed between the Germans and the Americans and then deployed in Kansas. The Woodrow Wilson administration knew that upwards of 90% of the men subjected to it were incapacitated, as were their animals. And he knowingly and deliberately sent those men to Europe, devastating the European population, and then brought them back home, devastating America. And between 50 and 100 million people died. That's the kind of thing that doesn't cause one to rally around the flag and say, let's make America great again.
It sort of points out that it was never great. And that's
it does, doesn't it? Yeah. In fact, it points out that it was disgusting. And the reason that that's important is because we're reading the story in Baal Rashid Genesis. We're only in the sixth chapter. And mankind has become as disgusting as America was during the Woodrow Wilson administration. Now, by the way, that's not a whole long time removed from the Spanish-American War and the American Civil War.
No, not at all.
So, you go back, and prior to the Civil War, and before it and after it, America fought the Indian Wars. America was never great. It was always repulsive. But that was the way that the whole world was. And so, guys, I'd like to ask you a question. We're in Genesis 6.
Right.
One of the most troubling passages, stories, in the whole of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. For many people, particularly liberals, atheists, agnostics, scholars, and indeed Christians, is the story of the chosen people, Israel, leaving captivity in Egypt and returning to the promised land, but being asked to rid their home of some of the indigenous people. And they say that God is a wrathful, vengeful God, a murderous God. This is the story of the promised land being cleansed of these people come before or after the story of Noah.
Comes after.
Afterwards?
It does, doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
So, if you're reading the story in context, and it's the same book, by the way, it's presented in Bereshit and then in Exodus and the Torah. If you're reading the story of the Promised Land being polluted with people whose behavior was repulsive, might there be an example of people whose behavior was repulsive? And that God ridding the planet of those people? Would it be important to view let's remove these towns, starting with Jericho, to review that in context to see what God might have against them?
Yeah, Jericho would be the meaning of the moon.
Have you ever heard, though, anyone who is criticizing what God asked the children of Israel to do? Have you ever heard anyone put it in the context of what God did relative to the flood in Noah?
No, not ever. No.
Have you ever heard anybody tell the story of Noah and the flood and explain why this region was being deluged and cleansed?
Yeah, I've heard, real fragmented, things were being torn up. And usually they say by giants, no less, which is just outrageous. But,
Well, they never connect the dots very well. I mean, they seem to skim over it and don't really get it. The same thing when in Jericho. I mean, this is his piece of land. It was promised to Abraham. It belonged to him. God didn't ask for anything. 1%, and I don't think it's that, but let's just say for easy math, 1% of the world's population.
2/10 of 1% of the Middle East.
Land. And that's what he claims. 1% of the Middle East. I gave it to Abraham. Hmm. It's my home. That's where I'm going to put my place.
Yeah, but all these places had, when you start looking at the names, when you seriously start considering Yahweh's words, whether it's Jericho, meaning of the moon, or whether it's Ai, which is a heap of ruins, or whether it's Gibbon, which is evil and idolatrous hill, or, on and on and on. They all
are people that call themselves Lachish, which was invincible individuals.
Yeah.
Which sounds like the people he's trying to wipe out of the flood. Then you've got Hebron, which is Chebron, meaning to associate with the occult.
Yeah.
And the beer, which is to
fear the word. Right. Fear the word is what it is.
Hazor, which means a protected enclosure or castle, man trying to protect himself. I mean, those towns, according to Yahweh, displayed the kind of perversity that was existing in Mesopotamia, which is why he responded in 2968 BCE with the flood.
Mm-hmm.
If he did not do that, if he did not reset humankind, if he did not do this pruning, and we're going to hear in a moment that it was a pruning, which tells you he didn't wipe out the entire human species, eight people, because that's not the nature of a pruning. If you're going to go prune your rose, are you going to take it down to what would represent, let's say there's 100 million people, and you're going to leave, so 8 out of 100 million, whatever percentage that is that what you do when you prune the rose? Or you prune your fruit tree?
That's even beyond a culling. That's just a wipeout.
Typically, when you're going to prune a fruit tree, you try not to take more than a third of the tree. Pruning, not an uprooting. So the nature.
Where are we at, by the way, in 6?
Well, I haven't actually gone into the next statement. I just wanted to make the point and we're going to begin with 6:12. But I just want to make the point that the part of the Torah that people have the biggest issue with is when God tells the children of Israel to eliminate the population of these handful of towns. And yet they don't view it in context to understand why that was the most merciful thing that could possibly be done. And I say that for the same reason it was the most merciful thing that could be done for humankind to flood this region from the Black Sea down to effectively Ur.
Mm-hmm. And you nailed it perfectly when you use the analogy of you're moving into a new house. It's infested with disease-carrying rats. Is it merciful to kill all the rats to protect your family? That is the perfect analogy.
Right. Whether you're going to be like America in World War II or World War I, are you going to spread more of the disease? Are you going to be a carrier of the disease, a perpetrator of the disease, or are you going to eliminate the disease?
There's another good analogy, and it's what you wrote in Yada Yada, because you asked, you know, if you were God and you could slay Muhammad and his 100 most loyal companions in 622 CE, would you, knowing that Islam would ravage the world, terrorizing and killing and plundering tens of millions, if you could wipe out Hitler and the 10,000 most fervent Nazis in 38, would you do it and spare 50 million lives? And in 48, would you eliminate Mao and his 100,000, you know, most fervent supporters and thus spare 60 million Chinese women, men, and children? Of course you would. If you have a brain, you would.
And, so why and do you think that Yahweh allowed Muhammad and his 100 most loyal goons, who were rapists and were pedophiles and who were engaged in the slave trade and mass murderers and terrorists, what do you think Yahweh, who could have wiped him out, allowed him to prevail and establish the religion of Islam?
Because of free will.
That's right.
Free will. Simple as that.
Right, because, you know, if there is a limitation on Satan creating a religion, then there is no free will. That's, I mean, Satan was conceived and he was deployed to promote religion and governance and human schemes that can be considered superior to God and to be the alternative to God. And so Islam has to exist for there to be free will. Now, that said, there are times and there are places where if free will was totally unchecked, then we would really never know Yahweh's plan.
No.
And the flood is one of those examples.
Yeah, that's one of the few where he actually intercedes, and he makes it clear he intercedes.
And if he didn't intercede then, we would not be having this conversation today.
No, we wouldn't be, because everybody with an Islam that could think clearly, which wasn't too many in that region, would have been destroyed. Sure.
I think two things would have happened. You know, if you look how devastating humanity has been to its fellow man, and how egregious man was already, you know, 1,000 years after the exodus from the garden. Can you imagine man with an Osama with another 1,000 years? Do you think that our planet, for example, would survive on its own devices, not blow itself up, not poison itself, not destroy it, if God did not intervene in your 6,000 years?
No.
No. Add 1,000 years to man's malfeasance, and where do you think you are? We're already gone. We're not having this conversation because mankind would have polluted and devastated the earth with its wars and with its biological agents and with everything else that man does that is disgusting.
Well, he has to reconstitute the Earth, and he says so. Right. I mean, all this. I mean, it's horrific.
So,
what
so we would not be having this conversation. And there was another reason for it. The story of Noah and the Ark is a story of one in a million.
Somebody that lived
there
was there.
Yeah, eight people, and let's say it, no less than 8 million people in that region. And one group of people listened to, you know, it started with one, and then it was his family. And they listened to what God had to say, and they trusted him and acted upon what he had to say. And Yahweh provided the provision, the instructions, I should say, the instructions that were trustworthy to spare this man and his family. This is the story of the covenant. You know, there's so many people that pretend to be smart scholars, and they attribute the story of Noah to the Babylonian folklore. Mm-hmm. And it says the Gilgamesh epic because that epic has a flood story in it. And you go, how could you be so stupid? I mean, I've read the 12 books. The 12 books are about the 12 signs in the zodiac and about this fellow that's trying to appease the gods and negotiate salvation for humankind based upon battling gods that are capricious in the signs of the zodiac. And here you have the story of Noah and his relationship with Yahweh, which is a simple presentation of the covenant. Of God laid out a set of instructions, Noah listened to him and acted upon him, and as a result, he and his family were one in the million who was spared. And that's what this story is all about. If it wasn't for the flood, we would not have that story, would we?
Yeah,
we also wouldn't have the realization that is there any place in the story of Noah where God says, because they chose not to love me, I have chosen to torture them forever.
No.
No.
That would be the Lord.
Is there
that.
Either
I
half of that equation?
I would not play at that point.
Right. That's right. It,
I don't
it doesn't
know that
say
God.
Because. Right. He didn't say because they were mean to me. God didn't say I'm going to lash out at them because they don't love me. He didn't say I'm going to lash out at them because they don't worship me. He didn't say I'm going to lash out at them because they don't bow down to me. He said he's going to lash out at them because they were despicable, because they were violent, because they were cruel, because they were devastating. They were terrorizing their fellow humans. It wasn't the way that they were treating him that bothered him.
Yeah, it's what
they were about worshiping or bowing down or acquiescing to him or loving. It was how they were treating one another and the earth, how they were treating his creation that bothered him.
Right.
Yeah. And then he simply said,
that's a very good point, by the way, one that I didn't even really think of. Because there are
people,
it's hard to
fear God, you know, and religion, you know, if you, you know,
right.
Bow down to him or, you know, he's going to put you in hell. No, that is not what he's saying here. For if he was saying it, then he would be a God not worth knowing. You know, the next time the Christian tells you that you want to come to a worship service, say, wait a minute, you want to tell me that your God created man to worship him? He's that insecure? No, thank you. I do not want to know that kind of God. No, that's not what he said, though. I mean, so I don't know how you get the fear of the Lord or religious veneration, because that's not the problem here. These people were really religious.
Yeah, they were. They even had religious names.
Right.
They did.
Yeah, they did. And so the issue here was not that they didn't love God. It's not that they didn't know God. God doesn't care if you choose not to love me. He doesn't care if you choose not to know him. That's your choice. Doesn't care. It's that they were devastating to his creation. That I think God does care when men rape women. I think he does care when men act as pedophiles. I think he does care when men do things like Woodrow Wilson and conceive biological weapons and deploy them, killing millions of people. I think he does care when we keep, when we manufacture and deploy weapons of mass destruction. I think when we're cruel and we abuse his creation, I think he does care. I don't think he gives a hoot, though, if we don't know him or care or love him. I think he cares.
Well, think about
love
it in terms of the father. You know, you're not messing with me. You're not messing with my kids. You're not messing with anything that's mine. Do what you want to do.
Do what you want
to
do.
Now, you come into my yard. You start tearing up my yard. I'm going to have something to say about that. You start messing with my kids. I'm going to have something to say about that.
Correct. You know, it's the reason I say that all the time. I'm pro-choice, so if you want to ruin your life with drugs, I don't give a hoot.
No.
Personally, I'm not going to use them. Personally, I'm going to tell my children not to use them. My children don't use them. I don't use them. But if you want to use them, you know, the general you population out there, I don't really give a hoot. But if you use a drug and you injure one of my children, and I care a lot, or if you try to induce my children to use drugs, you're my enemy. And so that's God's view here. And the penalty, Quince, if you will, for those who were devastating to their fellow humans was simply to eliminate them. They were tortured forever. They abused the gift of life, and God truncated it.
Yeah, we're in the process of dying to begin with. It's not a life forever.
Mm-hmm.
So he just shortened it. You got it, now you don't have it.
That's correct.
You didn't torture them.
You know, there are arguments, people that want to debate this, obviously. And, you know, one of the worst ones is that it's the reads like the Quran. And, of course, then you point out, no, they're 25,000 times difference. And you show them the fact. Obviously, you've never read either one. And you lay these, and you've certainly never considered Yahweh's words. And at the end of it all, I've had plenty of people say, well, then, no, why isn't he going to save me? You know, I mean, they can't even be thankful for what life has given them.
Why would he?
And why
would he save you?
Yeah. You've never read what he had to say. You don't like what he has to say. You think that what the adversary has to say is the same. Why would he want to save you?
Right. That's
and
been tried
have
before.
Every reason to disassociate with you.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, it's amazing. They talk in circles, but, you know, men often do. The ones that will bring this up the most are obviously secular humanists. And the thing about secular humanists is they actually think they're bright. I got into a debate, and I laid out the 6 days. He goes, prove it! Prove it! And I said, okay, here we go. Here's the math. 6 days. You know, he wanted to debate general relativity. I said, so you mean to tell me that an MIT-trained scholar, this is his math, it's not mine, you mean to tell me you're smarter than he is? I said, that tells me a lot about you. And I said, I'll tell you what it tells me. You're a moron. I said, that's an insult to morons. And that was the end of the discussion. We're done here.
You know Schroeder, who wrote the book that came up with
Science of God.
Yeah, the problem with that book is that he, other than speaking of the CMB, the cosmic background radiation, and referencing the fact that it's a 10 to the 12th time differential in terms of temperature and therefore wavelength, and heat, he does not do a very good job of proving that is the reliable mechanism. And so I remember reading it, and I said, well, first of all, if what he is saying here is true, this is profound. This is jaw-dropping if what he's saying is true, but there isn't enough evidence in his book. I'm
not the introduction to the concept and the theory. It's enough to get you interested to do your own investigation.
Right. So I did, before I wrote on it, I did an investigation. I looked at every conceivable means of dating the Big Bang.
Yeah, there were
and
four of them.
And of all of the issues related to Quark confinement and therefore how precisely this wavelength had been stretched. And, you know, there's a lot of play in there. But what he didn't
some
do
play in
is,
there.
Is, yeah, what he didn't do is to nail down the specifics of how do you come up with these numbers. Now, when you do a diligent amount of investigation, when you seek to prove the math, then the numbers go from having a wide swath of difference to zeroing in on six 24-hour days. And
you mean by going to 14.7 billion years type
of thing? Yeah, uh-huh. Which is the most likely number now for using the most likely number on Quark confinement. And if you take the...
He also said there was no Big Bang. I said, buddy, man, we witnessed a black hole being, you know, formed, and there's giant screeching, and it's got to do with gamma rays. I said, what are you, are you kidding? You know, but he knew better. He was a genius. And I said, my guess is that you don't have any science credentials.
Yeah, well, now, in terms of noise, there is no noise in the void of space. You know, when you watch all of the Star Wars kind of movies, and there's all the noise of the spaceships and the bang when they explode, there really is no noise in space because there's no medium, air or water, for the noise to travel through. But a bang doesn't necessarily mean noise. It means explosion.
And
there was an explosion of energy.
We can observe the universe is expanding. Therefore, you know, we can
we know there was an explosion of energy.
It was all together. That's
you ever see a nuclear bomb go off? You ever see a nuclear bomb go off?
Yes.
Yeah,
video.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. When it goes off, is there a sound associated with it initially, or just an explosion of light?
No, just an explosion. There isn't a sound associated with it. A
would
giant
call
flash.
A nuclear explosion, a Big Bang.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So if you're going to play the nuance, well, there wasn't really a bang because a bang implies noise. No, come on.
Thank you for straightening me out.
That's
fine. But it was my understanding that gamma rays do cause a good bit amount of noise. I didn't know that, but it seems
to me. Yeah, they just can't travel. They just can't travel through noise. Sound requires a medium to travel through.
Yeah, for vibration.
Right. And so in space, there really is no sound, but that doesn't change the fact that there was a giant explosion, and we call explosions Big Bangs.
Yeah.
That's just that's what the nomenclature means. It really means big explosion.
At that point, the guy's reaching for straws because
I like that nomenclature.
To stand on.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
no, I'm just, the point is, the guy, he was so smart, and then he wanted to tell me about building shipbuilding. And I said, first of all, I said, you know, if I have the dimensions here, and they're equivalent to our most advanced ships today, and buddy, they are, in terms of draft and everything. Mm-hmm. I said, so what you want to debate shipbuilding? I said, go debate it with a shipbuilder. I'm not a shipbuilder. I'm showing you dimensions. They were written. These are words that were used. They can't be changed. They're in front of your face.
Yeah, we're giving
you want to run away and not talk about shipbuilding.
Length, we get the length, the width, and the overall height, which is a combination of draft and freeboard. We're given those dimensions, yeah, and it's the same as the most stable aircraft carrier, super tanker of today.
I end it simply. You know, I have no problem debating any topic with you, but whenever time you lose the debate and change the topic, I quit. Because there's end to this, and we will go down this rabbit hole forever, and I have no
interest. Not only that, but if you're going to look at facts and you're going to disassociate the debate from those facts, we're done too. I mean, what are we talking about here?
Yeah.
I'm under no obligation to drag people kicking and screaming out of Babylon. You know, they see the mistake these people make is they think we're in a church building trying to build a membership role or something.
No, no.
And that's not what's happening here.
Did you find Noah sitting on top of the ark that he was building? Trying to build him, trying to make himself a minor kingdom.
Come on this ark.
No.
No.
It wasn't, it wasn't even his option to do so. God didn't say, you know, no, I want you to go out there and be an evangelist and spread the word and save as many people as you can. God didn't say that. The ark represents the covenant. The covenant wasn't Noah's family. It's Yahweh's family. God gets to choose.
Good point.
And so, you didn't have Noah out there as an evangelist.
No, and we're under no obligation to be evangelists. We're under, I think, a certain obligation to share words with people.
Yeah.
And those who want to pick those words up and run with them, that's another issue. They're thankful. Believe me, I ran into hundreds of them at this point.
Yeah,
they're
I think you're close. I don't think we're under an obligation to share the words.
No,
We just can't help ourselves.
Well, yeah, but that's the obligation. I mean, look, if I knew, I think I'd be under a certain obligation if you were honestly coming to me saying, I'm looking for this path so I don't fall off the cliff and I know where the path is. I mean, I think it would only be decent of me and loving of me, in fact, to tell you where that path was. And I think that that's the kind of bayith we have. You know
we hear the path that Yahweh has provided because it is in our nature as part of his family. Yahweh didn't hide the path. Yahweh wants everybody to know the path. He didn't want everybody to be part of his family, but he wants everybody to have the opportunity to walk down that path should they choose to do so. He didn't create the earth and humans and animals for us all to be belligerent. He created a path as a way home. The ark is a symbol of that, in that the story is, are you willing to listen to what Yahweh has to say? Are you willing to take the time to investigate what he has to say? Are you willing to act upon it, trusting him? If you are, you're going to end up in the same situation as Noah. If you aren't, you're going to end up in the same situation as all those people outside of the ark.
And that's the story here.
That is the story.
I got two simple rules when I engage people on this. One, I will engage with anyone who is interested or shows a remote interest in knowing the truth or trying to challenge the truth. I will engage with them and I will discuss with them. And two, I don't forgot what I was going to say. But, I will engage. I will let a lie go unanswered in my presence.
There you go. And those that's about where I'm at, too. That's it. I mean, I'm not out there fishing for morons, you know, when luckily, you know, I've got a forum where I can just share notes over and over. And, you know, I only have 700 of them, so they might go out. You know, there's 100 of them that are really good, and I'll just keep putting them out and putting them out and putting them out. And they'll end up on people's pages, and then people will friend me, and then they'll say, where do I get this information? I send them to yada yada. I mean, into ITG, into Questioning Paul. And so then they can get right on the path and make their own journey, and that's what needs to happen. Right. You know,
where you're sharing the truth, you're witnessing to what Yahweh had to say, you're also exposing and condemning lies and liars, because the truth cannot live where lies are present.
That's right.
And if you're open to lies, then you're actually deceiving the people you're sharing with, because God is not going to invite somebody into his ark, into his family, that is polluted with religion and politics and governance and tism and all that sort of thing. So you do have to expose the lies.
Well, yeah, of course you do, and that's where you make the enemies. We had some guy in the chat room apparently last week that was saying that double Larry Hendricks is on there. You know, it's like, you know what? Kiss my ass. If you don't like Yahweh's words, I don't really care. I don't care. I don't even know why you're in the chat room where we discuss his words, if you don't believe them, you know.
And we're aggressive as it relates to exposing lies. So it says that Yahweh inspected Ra'ah. He looked upon and viewed the area, and indeed, he truly and surely, it was corrupt and spoiled. Shahat. It was ravaged. It was ruined. It was destroyed. For all related human flesh, which is Bashar. Bashar is an interesting word where it does mean flesh, and it speaks of human flesh, and it speaks of animalistic nature. It also means, the verb is to be a herald or a preacher.
A report.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Bashar is not a pleasant term if you're when you recognize how anti-religious Yahweh is. It's also really interesting that of course Gnosticism and you know Pauline Christianity being associated with disassociated from the flesh and associated with the spirit, you know, that's their whole thing. And yet the preacher, religious preacher or herald, is being associated here with the flesh by Yahweh. Treading upon the earth had become a putrid and polluted slime pit of corruption and decay. Shahat again. Destructive practices, wasteful devastation, spoiling his creation. Now, interesting too that Darak, treading upon, is the term that's used because when we look at Daniel's revelations about the future of humanity, and he talks about Imperial Rome and Roman Catholicism that grew out of
treading.
Imperial Rome.
Mm-hmm.
Treading. Yeah, it's treading. Trampling underfoot. Treading upon.
By the way, that's what the Jezebites or Jezebites today, that's what that means. That's
yeah.
pretty wild.
Treading.
Trampling underfoot.
Yeah, treading. Trampling underfoot.
Yeah.
That's something that Yahweh doesn't like very much. And what's interesting here, while Yahweh wants us to stand up and to walk with him, what he really dislikes is people who rise above other people and tread upon them. You know, you can't tread upon a person that is standing, their back bowed, but you can sure as hell tread upon somebody that's cowering or that's bowing down, can't you?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the idea of man forcefully toppling and walking over other men, treading them underfoot.
Yeah, in submission. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So treading here is an important term. And again, the point I made earlier is that Yahweh isn't reacting to these people by saying, they didn't fear me. He didn't say, they didn't love me. He didn't say, they didn't worship me. In fact, his comments here have nothing to do with him and the relationship of these people to him.
That's right.
Powerful. I've never heard anybody even bring that up, but that's what's powerful.
That is powerful. Matter of fact, that's one of the reasons that you look at say evangelizing.
Uh-huh.
And in the past, evangelizing was done by force in certain parts of Utah,
correct.
And Mormonism it still is, and Islam
is completely. Look what the Spanish Roman Catholics did in the Americas, or what the Protestants
yep.
did when they devastated
the Indians. Oh yeah. How about Islam today? You will get down
right.
on your knees. You will convert to our religion, or
right.
we will cut your head off.
Right.
Well,
right.
they claim to believe everything right up to Yitzhak, you know.
Yeah.
And at that point, they're saying, no, it's Ishmael. Okay. Yeah. Well, when he walked out of Babylon, he did so on his own accord because he decided
yeah.
to trust Yahweh.
See,
he wasn't dragged out of there with a horse.
No. The first Muslims tread upon the world. They killed a higher percentage of the world's population than any people in all of human history, treading upon the civilized world. And it is man treading upon his fellow man. It's man rising up as if he had the right to lord over other humans that is what upsets God. There is no place here where God says they weren't being religious. So I...
Yeah, enough.
I decided to smoke them. That they didn't worship. That is profoundly different. And that's why the God of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms is profoundly different than the religious God. This God did not say, like Islam. Islam, Allah is constantly saying, you either submit to my will or I'm going to terrorize you. God's not saying that. The issue he had wasn't these people's relationship to him, but instead their relationship to their fellow man. We were abusive. America, the fact that America is an ungodly place, that Yahweh's name is not known, that Yahweh's name is not spoken, that the adversarial, estranged religions of Christianity and Islam and socialist secular humanism prevail, that's not the issue that Yahweh had against America. In fact, in Yeshayah 18, as Yahweh begins by saying, woe to America, the things that he lists are that we're drugged, we're arrogant, and we're militaristic. We treat the world like we
own. Dragging the rest of the world around, telling them what to
right.
do.
Correct.
Yep.
Exactly the same thing as he has to say here. So God doesn't care if you choose not to love him. Most certainly doesn't care if you choose not to worship him because he doesn't want to be worshipped. But he sure as heck does care when aggressive individuals tread upon and harm and rape and plunder and enslave and abuse his creation and his fellow man.
Let me ask you about America. When did we decide it was okay for our government, to steal everybody's stuff?
Right.
I mean,
we began a lot of that with Woodrow Wilson with the federal income tax.
Yeah, with the 1913 and the all
and
that.
We certainly did more of it with the FDR.
Well, look at
FDR took what it was like 95% of the multiple's wealth. That's the reason why the Great Depression lasted so long. Is he just thought it was okay to steal everything from those who were productive, and it.
Oh, he was purely insane, in my opinion.
Right.
And he's a war criminal, both.
Right. And so, and then, you go to Lyndon Baines Johnson, LBJ, and he created the Great Society, which was about taking from those who were productive and lavishing all manner of indulgences on those who were not.
Sounds
so when did we decide to do
that?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's certainly in complete opposition to the Torah, because stealing from productive people to give to non-productive people is stealing, and theft is a big problem in the Torah.
Right. Now, all Yahweh says is that loans are forgiven, and slaves are freed, and the land is returned every 50 years.
Yeah, that's the yoke.
What that means is you is so long, and he's by the way, he's really keen that cheating in business is listed as one of the key abominations. So long as you deal honestly with others, so long as you leave a portion of whatever you produce for others to engage and benefit, so long as you don't build great dynasties and pass on your earnings generation to generation, so long as you're willing to play by what is a sane economic policy, he doesn't have you paying a tax. He doesn't have you funding a military. As a matter of fact, what he says is, if you'll follow this advice, the whole world will look to you as this bastion of hope. They're not going to want to rob you or to invade you. I look to you as with respect, but of course we don't play it by Yahweh's instructions, and so it's just not that way. But anyway,
it's a sad thing. Even doing business today is a really sad thing. It's a tested engine. We'll ship it out, and then somebody puts it in and say, look, this. It was a good looking engine, this and that, but inside the timing cover it's leaking, it's going to take $1,000 to fix. And a guy will say, well, tell him to take it out. you know, charge this poor guy $1,200, and I've learned to play dirty with these guys. Oh, really? You know, why don't you eat five, and I'll eat five, and we'll get this thing done. Nope, we'll have them take it out. You know what I do? I say, you got your core ready? I ship it back to them, and I charge them back. I ship them an old core. Now, you might think that's dirty, but no, I think that's fair in that case. You know, yeah, you want to lie to people to do business? Okay, here's what you get back.
Yeah,
you know,
quid pro quo. God said to Noah, "I am pruning, yes, limiting, constraining, diminishing, even putting a limit to, cutting off part of an extremity by shearing. All humans who are related to this Bashar, these people who are preachers and messengers." The braggadocious, you know, the ones like politicians that are preachers, you know, flapping their lips.
Oh, yeah.
Moving about before me. Indeed, the region is filled with Mali, is overflowing with terrorism, lawlessness, and cruelty, Hamas. So once again, it is reemphasized. Yahweh isn't saying, love me or I'm going to see to it that you're being tortured forever. A, there's no reference to torturing anybody. There's no reference here to an eternal punishment. There's no reference to a punishment. There's a pruning. Pruning's healthy.
And by the way, this also points again to the fact there was not a worldwide flood. It was regional.
Correct. Yeah. And he's saying that the thing that is problem is not man's relationship with him, or lack thereof, but the fact that we were disgusting. We were engaged in terrorism. But, you know, terrorism is using military tactics to kill civilians for the purpose of political or religious change.
Trying to see that on both sides.
Right now in the world, who is the most ruthless terrorist nation?
Well, it would be the U.S. at this point.
It would be, wouldn't it? Yeah, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
You know, this idea that people are having a conniption fit because Donald Trump said, I think we ought to constrain the number of Muslims that come into the country. We ought to ban Muslims until we can figure this thing out, coming into the country. And yet America is bombing Muslims and killing Muslims by the tens of thousands and has killed Muslims in its bombings over the last two decades to the tune of about a million.
A million. A million. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bombing civilians. I mean, if you look at those that we've killed with our drones, we've killed about 100 civilians for every one quote-unquote terrorist.
Yeah, and even
we are the terrorist nation. If you look at what nation is the cruelest in terms of making and deploying weapons of mass destruction?
That's the United States.
Well,
where we enable the others to...
Right. And
I shouldn't even say us. I think we're separate. No. That's the U.S. We're not part of that.
And by the way, the United States is not only the world's largest military and the nation most prone to use its military.
We're the biggest arms dealers, too.
But we're the biggest arms dealer in the world, by far.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And providing weapons to people like the Islamic State, and then bombing the Islamic State for using those weapons. I mean, that's cool.
Yeah, well, first of all, why would you arm ISIS? Why would you do that? I mean, this is insane on its face.
Right.
And why would you, just prior to the last election, give it to the Syrian rebels, which are the same guys cutting heads off and raping little girls and all that. I don't want one ounce of my productivity going towards doing that to other people.
Right. We provided the money through OPEC.
Training.
And we provide the weapons.
And not just that. I mean, we've flat given them money. Come on.
Of course. Yeah.
Just straight up.
And
here,
Hamas
here's a $500 million.
Right. Hamas is terrorism. It's cruelty. It's destruction. It's plunder. It's killing, it's thievery, it's injustice, it's looting without any moral restraint.
By the way, isn't there a terrorist organization literally named Hamas?
Correct.
Wow. That's as good as the rabbis calling their, system to hide Yahweh's name, Shoah.
Correct. That's right. Yeah, which means to deceive, to
mislead. Naming your kids Sheol. I mean, this is insane. I mean, you sit there and words mean things in Paleo Hebrew. Right. Who the hell would name their kids Sheol?
Right.
I mean, after King Sheol. I mean, he wasn't exactly a hero in the Torah.
But it says here,
someone who has very low expectations for their child.
It says, I will bring a ruin to them along with the region. Along with the region. Did God said, I'm going to ruin the entire earth?
No.
No.
Region is region.
Never.
Region is region. Eretz is the land or the region. It's not the... It's only earth in terms of the ground, but if you're going to, you know, that's Adama for the most part. But it's the, for example, when you're dealing with Eretz, its most prominent use is the land, which is the promised land that represents 0.2% of just the Middle East, for crying out loud.
Yeah, and that's, and by the way, if I recall, the word is Taleb, isn't it? Or Taleb.
Oh, yeah. World. Yeah, world. Yep. So this is the region. It's because mankind was ruinous. And this, by the way, is a quid pro quo. This is, they were shahat. They were laying waste to the their fellow man. So he is going to shahat, lay waste to them. And it is definitely pruning, which is kes, which is limiting and constraining. He didn't say, I'm going to uproot everything. He didn't say, I'm going to eliminate humankind. I'm going to prune humankind. And if he had not pruned humankind, we would not be having this conversation today.
No, couldn't have said that.
Yep. So this is what Yahweh says. Based upon that, he says, so it's always in context with Yahweh. So, yeah, he wasn't telling Noah, hey, oh, by the way, there's a asteroid that's going to hit, and it's going to well up a bunch of seawater, and there's going to be this big flood, and, you know, there's nothing I can do to stop this daggone asteroid. And so, you know, I want you to build a boat for you and your family and some of the animals because this asteroid is unstoppable. No. The issue was that mankind became terroristic, that mankind became looters and vicious to their fellow man. And so it was to separate Noah and his family from people exercising Hamas, cruelty and viciousness. The flood was the means to accomplish that. It wasn't the purpose. You know, that's a big, big misunderstanding for people.
I'm not sure what you mean there.
People look at Noah and the flood, and that the purpose of the ark was to save Noah from the flood. No, the flood was not the problem.
The
thing that Yahweh was separating Noah and his family from was humans who were Hamas,
right.
Were vicious.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's
the flood was just the tool.
Hey,
yeah, that's just another example of teruah, really.
The flood wasn't good or bad. You know, it's like a hammer. The hammer's not good or bad. The hammer's a tool. The flood was a tool.
No, I get you. Yeah, I got you now.
And people want to focus on the flood as opposed to those in the ark. That's not the separation.
Yeah, and you will hear that too. What kind of a God would flood the world and kill people? You know, and you know, it's
if he had been his family, he could have taken them. You know, he knew ahead of time he was coming, so he could obviously throw them there. Well, he could have got them all out of town if that was the issue. That's not the issue.
The issue here was humanity had become Hamas.
Yes,
that's the
issue. And Yahweh was separating Noah from humanity. The flood was simply a tool to accomplish that. So this is not a story of the flood. You know, it's always talked about, it's the flood story. No, it's not the story of the flood. That's like saying you build a beautiful home and it's the hammer story. or it's the lumber story.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that's the story of saving one man and his family from the absolute corruption.
I never really heard it put this way. I know, I mean, I never really heard it put this way. That's a good point. I mean, he was separating. And to me, this is another foreshadowing of Tarua.
It's a foreshadowing of the tribulation. Mankind has become Hamas. We've become Tarua. Terrorism is the world over. People are plundering their fellow humans. We're killing our fellow humans. We've become thieves. There is injustice. We're cruel. The world has become Hamas. The world was Hamas. This is the story of Hamas, of cruelty, of terrorism, of thievery, of injustice, of plunder, of Torahlessness. That is what this is. That's the story. That is what Noah and his family are being separated from and spared from. That's what we, when we join the covenant, are being separated from and spared from, is the institutions of man, from mankind being Hamas. The flood is simply a tool that Yahweh used to provide the means to ultimately cleansing this area so that those he separated from these things would have a place to live that was no longer infected.
It's always Kodesh, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's always,
always separated and set apart.
Yeah, it's always Kodesh. All right, so with Yahweh, just as with the covenant, the covenant, you know, that Christianity wants to tell you that salvation is a gift is because that's how Paul wrote, you know.
They've got Yahweh focused on salvation. If he wanted to save everybody in a flood, he could have done so.
Salvation was
constant focus. He's horrible at his job.
Well, the fact is, at the story of Noah and mankind being Hamas, the purpose of the flood was to eliminate humankind in that area, not to save humankind. This is not a story of man, of him trying to save humankind. It's a story of him trying to prune back humankind. So it's
to separate his people from them, because Noah and his family were clearly his people, you know.
But when they went into the promised land, how long could they possibly have survived if they hadn't got rid of those people?
A decade, maybe? Well,
then
maybe a decade. We wouldn't be reading this story.
No.
The Torah would never have come down to us. Now, in this particular case, where Pauline Christianity, because Pauline Christianity doesn't give you anything to actually know, you have to believe, and therefore if it's only belief, then God's gift of salvation has to be capricious, based on nothing, so it's called a free gift. But that's not how it works. You know, that's not how the Torah guidance is presented. The Torah is guidance and instruction of what you need to know and to do to be part of Yahweh's family. And that's what Yahweh did here. He gave Noah a set of instructions and guidance, and the reason that Noah and his family were protected was because they listened to what he had to say and they acted upon it. And the word to act on is used twice in this next sentence. It says, and the first one, by the way, is written in the imperative mood. The imperative mood conveys second person volition. That's not the volition of the speaker. That would be first person volition. It's second person volition, which means that the person who is speaking is encouraging the person that they're speaking to act on their own free will to choose to make this decision. That's the imperative. So, elect to act and engage. Making, ashah, choose to perform the work to fashion. The imperative mood, and which is volitional, second person, and the call stem, actual. For yourself, a timber, a wooden ark, a boat, large ship, of resinous lumber and tire of gopher laminated wood, construct stalls on the ship, on the large ark, and cover, coat, kapar, parts of her living quarters, bath, parts of her family homes, houses, rooms, and exterior in pitch, kofar, tar, natural bituminous material. Okay, well, a couple of interesting things here. If it was not gopher, which is laminated wood, there is no way that the story has any credibility. Because that way, Yahweh would be requiring of Noah something that would have been impossible. Now, that's the Pauline depiction of the Torah. It's impossible to do what the Torah says, so you're condemned by it. If Yahweh says, I want you to cut down the largest trees, trees that would be sufficient in size to make the beams and the ribbing and the keel of a ship of this size, Noah and his boys and their wives couldn't do it. So this would be the Torah of Pauline Christianity, impossible to act upon. But because it's laminated wood, and laminated wood, it means all you have to do is cut pieces that any one or two people can carry and laminate them together. And I don't know how many of you guys are aware in home building today how almost all structural members of homes and buildings are laminated today.
Oh, yeah.
Send because of laminated, right. Less labor involved. It's less devastating on the environment and much stronger.
Mm-hmm.
This was an engineered structure. Laminated. Gopher.
And then for the time.
Right. Yes. It was an engineering marvel at the time, but it was possible for four men and their wives to build this way. And then the next thing was covered in pitch. Now, there is no indication that pitch was used at this time, but it had to be available, and that does mean that the earth, by the way, happened to be very old. Otherwise, whether it is a fossil fuel pitch, in our dead plants and dead animals, or it's heat and pressure, and probably a little bit of both. It takes a lot of time.
Let me ask a question for Roy, because
mm-hmm.
we were talking about he was talking about the hard part he has about discovery of Noah's Ark was that over time he just can't wrap his head around how it didn't disintegrate.
Now, Now, the answer
is... Was it petrified, do you think?
Yeah.
Was it frozen? Or?
Well, a combination of two things. One is it's covered in pitch.
Well, that's why I brought it up.
I mean, it's well-sealed and laminated wood covered in pitch. But the most important reason is that the mountains of Ararat are volcanic. And this was... partially covered in one of the volcanic eruptions, and it's eroded around it. It's the same way, you know, when you find a dinosaur bone, a fossil, for the most part, what you're finding isn't the actual bone of the dinosaur, but where the bone was, and then its secretions and sediments that have as that bone decayed. That filled in that area to become the shape of that bone.
Yeah, just like Pompeii.
Yeah, and so to a large degree, the ark was preserved in that way. Now, also, it's very high, and the higher you go, the less this thing is prone to decay. And
less
the part that was exposed could have well been covered in ice, but it was covered in. Like Pompeii and the volcanic ash of but you know even in Pompeii the kind of sediment if it was just lava would have destroyed everything but it wasn't lava that coated Pompeii initially same thing with the earth. Right. You know, Pompeii, you can actually see the colors of the tiles and the mosaics and the frescoes on the walls and all that sort of thing. So, no, it's preserved the same way.
Okay, that makes sense.
Preserved the same way. And, you know, it's what we're able to see of it now is extremely clear. If you were to, on Google Earth, Google the idea of, I think it's in eastern Turkey, the national park, the Turkish National Park of the Ark. And Google Maps will take you right there, and it is unmistakably a ship in these dimensions, and it's exactly what Ron Wyatt found and wrote about.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's there for all to see. But even if it wasn't there for all to see, it doesn't matter.
No.
Not in my mind. The story of the Ark and the story of Noah and his family is explained in Bereshit 6:14. Elect to act and engage, making for yourself a timber ark of resinous lumber and tar. Construct stalls on the ship and cover parts of her Bayeth, the basis of Bayreth, family homes, in pitch. God's laying out instructions. Noah and his family listened and acted upon those instructions. And that's the story of the ark. Kafar, by the way, meaning to coat, is the basis of Yom Kapharim. Kafar. It's indistinguishable in its root. To cover over. To provide a covering. These are her production, manufacturing, ashah, relationships. The ark's length, 300 cubits. Her width, 50 cubits. And her height, 30 cubits. Now, in this particular case, it really doesn't matter if you're using what was the Egyptian cubit, which is what, at the time would be the most notable, like when Moshe and the children of Israel were writing this down and had to come up with a unit of measure, it's the thing that would have been best known to them, which was equivalent today of 20.6 inches. Or whether or not it was what was later called the Hebrew cubit, 1,000 years later, which was 18 inches. Doesn't really matter. What matters here is the ratio of these things.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're using the most likely one, and the ark is 515 feet long overall, had an 86-foot beam, and 52 feet high from keel to roof line of the deckhouse. And if you use those ratios and compare them to vessels of the time, there is no comparison. But if you compare them to the most stable, largest vessels made today, they're identical. Now, that's one of the things where you'd say, okay, they didn't just guess.
I had a guy that wanted to debate it. I'm done with him right there. How stupid is that? That's just stupid.
You know, and then we looked at the aircraft carrier USS Nimitz, same ratio. We looked at the Bismarck, same ratio. We looked at the Seawise Giant, which is the largest, which was originally called the Nock Nevis, largest of the super tankers. Same dimensions. All the way around, not just length to width, but also freeboard and the keel, distance from the freeboard to the keel. Same measurements. So engage by building a roof to the point of a cubit above the completed ark. God wants a protective covering. I know that's the nature of the Garden of Eden, protective garden. The nature of Sukkah. That's where you're leading us to. The protective, camping out under a protective covering. Place the doorway, the entrance of the ship, inner side. Construct a second and third. So, put a doorway inner side and then have a second or third. It's really, here you have several things that are worth pondering. The The first is that nobody puts a doorway in the side of a ship unless you're God and you're trying to make a point.
Yeah.
And the point here is that there's only one doorway into my home. And if you're going to walk straight in to that doorway, I'm not going to have you go, you know, up a hill, down some stairs, you know, through a labyrinth, you know, and you're not going to walk over a precarious gangway. I want you to walk straight into to this. No climbing, no jumping, no diving, no contortion. Straight ahead. You just walk straight into my home. Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, Shavuah, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah. Walk directly into my home. You don't waver. You don't go up and down. It's a level path. And the doorway into the home is the key aspect of this. Now, it just says construct a second and third. Most likely it's a second and third floor on the ark. But it could be a second or third doorway because, you know, there are decks, if you will. So it's either a second or third deck, or it's a second or third doorway. And, you know, if you look at Yahweh's overall plan, how many doorways are there in terms of we can choose?
Still one.
Well, there's one doorway that leads to him and to salvation in the ark, which is why he laid it out this way. But there's still two others, aren't there?
Yeah.
Right. There's one that leads to him. That's this doorway right in the side of the ship. But there's still two others.
Yeah, one leads to Satan. One leads to death.
To death.
Eternal damnation or death.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my take on it. But it could be a second or third floor of the ark. It doesn't say. It just says construct lower ones, the second and third. Now, the reason I like the fact that it's that there are three doors. One which you walk straight into. You know, don't have to climb, don't have to, no gymnastics. That's Yahweh's doorway, Pesach, right into his home. But the second and third are lower. You know, if you look at the other options, the other two choices, the three doorways, there's one that goes up and there's two.
They go down.
Beneath that, yeah. One that goes down and one that's
way down.
Goes nowhere. One that goes nowhere and one that goes way down, but they're both beneath the doorway to Yahweh's home. You know? So, that's my
well, I think you can't play in these things. I mean,
well, you know, and it's probably written that right way for you to think about it, too. I mean,
right,
yeah. Right. But I think it's one of the first tip-offs of there are three doorways. And it's one of the, you know, if you want to look at salvation, for example, this three doorways isn't a small deal. It rectifies the single biggest issue about the religious God.
You mean love me or burn in hell situation.
Yeah, love me or burn in hell. Now, and because what this is saying is that with the three doorways, is Yahweh saying, you know, there are three options. You can choose to listen to what I have and say and act upon it, and you can walk right into my home. Or you can choose to ignore what I have to say. You can choose to walk away. You can choose to go your own path, and you'll just cease to exist. Or you can choose to trample upon and tread over other people and mislead them and league with the adversary, and you'll spend eternity with him. Those are your three options. And you know what's interesting, too, is that to end up with Hasatan, it's not because you made a choice relative to Yahweh that was abusive or hurtful or non-submittal to Yahweh. To end up with Hasatan, to end up with the worst of those three options, it's how you treat fellow humans. It's misleading them. It's leading others astray. The most cruel of all hoaxes is this hoax of false hope. So that religion... as you know, governance brings.
Right.
That's the cruelest of all misleading. So once again, that third doorway is the doorway that is chosen by those who tread upon others by misleading them. So it's you know, a very profound point, and to be put in the middle of the salvation story, of the separation story, I think is important. So I'm
it's a separation story. It's not, you know, if Yahweh was focused on salvation again, he could have saved the whole thing. He could have foregone the flood. He, you know, forget the Burkle crater, you know.
Right.
But that's not what he did, you know.
I'm going to read this again and tell you that's why I think this is a second and third door. It says, you know, everybody else wants it to be a second and third deck, but it says engage by building a roof to the point of a cubit above the completed ark. Period. Place the doorway of the ark in her side. Period. Construct lower ones, a second and third. So, what are the ones?
Period. The ones would be doors.
Doors.
Be decks. He didn't
right.
say
there's been, decks. There's been no mention. There's been no mention of a deck. He's already talked about the roof and where to build and how high to build it. He doesn't say he's not building the second and third roof. There's only one roof. So it's, and he's not building multiple arcs. So the only thing that the that can be referenced here is doorways.
Doors.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, he didn't say anything about a deck.
Behold.
You're right. It's doors. And you're right. There's three options. You know, one, you can be actively deceiving people, then you're going to get to pass through that lake of fire, that metaphor for judgment, and enter the abyss separated for all eternity in hopelessness. Two, you're going to die, and the smaller percentage will just simply walk into the bath, directly into the bath.
Right. Exactly, straight in. And so Yahweh is emphasizing that point, which is essential to understanding who he is. But, you know, the thing I like about Yahweh's testimony, while it is consistent, while he's providing a ton of clues, while it's exciting when we uncover one of them and figure it out, and he wants us, you know, he's crediting us with the ability to figure it out and celebrating it when we do, it's not in your face. He's not speaking down to us as if we were stupid and saying, oh, by the way, here's the reason I'm talking about this one deck, and I'm mentioning two that are doors, the one door and the two that are lower, is because I want you to understand that this is the story of being part of my family and being separated from cruel, terroristic, human, religious, and political institutions and the options that people have. Now, if he were saying, if he said it that way, then where would be the opportunity for us to discover, to learn, to think, to celebrate having learned something?
Well, again, you're going back to, you know, the religious idea of ritual, you know, bend over, touch your nose, turn around twice, and all that stuff.
So,
yeah.
I want you to think your way to it. Think your way through the process. He credits us with being smart enough. He made us smart enough that if he lays out the plan and gives you the instructions, that you can figure it out.
You know, I'm not that smart. I'm not that smart. But I do know this. I know enough to know what Yahweh's plan is and where he put it and how it all ties together. And that's really all I've got to know. And I'm going to tell you what it does. And this is what it does. And everybody in the chat room knows this is what it does. When I say it, it'll be very simple. It separates us from others.
That's what it does.
It does
the same thing that the story of Noah's doing. You know,
yeah.
I just received a note from Roy on chaos theory as it relates to front-loading the genome with the ability to beat the odds of having most mutations be overwhelmingly negative. And I'm quite certain in reading it that Roy understands the interaction between this new chaos theory and front-loading the genome. But I don't. I've read it a couple times. I'm not there yet. and I don't understand the connection to...
I've read about it a dozen times, and I think I understand a tenth of what he wrote.
Yeah, and... You know, I understand a fair amount about the genome and DNA and negative gene mutation and how we have that the reason that the genome and DNA is so complex is because Yahweh gave us and his creation the ability to respond, to be observant and to respond to our environment. And benefits if we correctly respond to our environment. I understand all that and how that relates to his nature. I can't tie it. I have not yet made the tie and understand chaos theory. But I don't need to understand that to understand what Yahweh is offering us here and what he's telling us in this story. So, yeah, there's people that are a lot smarter than I am. But, well, Yahweh requires us to invest the time to know what he's offering. He's not making this all that hard. And if your mind's open, you're willing to invest the time. This is a pretty straightforward plan. That doorway is not hard to find.
You know,
open mind.
It takes an open mind. And, you know, I was talking with Elise today, and she was talking about how the world is going, you know, completely anti-Semitic. Okay?
Yeah.
And I
something
think,
Yahweh said would happen.
Right. Well, of course. But to me, just the fact that there's an Israel that exists, mm-hmm. where he called them back to the land in the last mm-hmm. kill bell, and the fact the world is going anti-Semitic is just confirmation. That's all it is.
Yeah, I've said this before, but I want to bring this up because it is important. It's not just the anti-Semitism from the nomenclature that we're most familiar with, where, for example, the most satanic of religions, Islam, is the most anti-Semitic book ever written. And it's socialist secular humanist institutions like Nazi Germany and communist Russia were anti-Semitic.
Mm-hmm.
What is the real name of Yahweh's chosen people?
Yehudim. Or Yisrael.
Yehudim. Yeah, it means related to Yah, doesn't it?
Right.
What is the
right.
primary meaning of Shem?
Name.
Name. Mm-hmm. So,
if you're anti-name, you're talking right. about most of Israel today.
Right. But if you're
anti-name,
you're anti-Yahweh's name associated with his people, you're anti-being related to Yahweh, you're anti-relating to Yahweh, you're anti-Yahweh.
Yeah,
that's the issue.
Yeah, well, of course, he said that would be the issue, except at the very end, there's going to be people within the family that are going to say, let's come back to Yahweh.
Right, and what is it that brings them back? Reverence for and the speaking of his name.
His name. That's right.
Yeah, the most anti-Semitic people on earth.
Probably the Jews.
Right, particularly rabbinic. The practitioners of Judaism are the most opposed to his name of all people on earth.
It's unbelievable, but it's true.
Second only to them would be Roman Catholicism.
Yeah, I guess I should have said anti-Jewish as opposed to anti-Semitic.
I think it is. Her point was valid. Her point was valid. Your point is valid. Yahweh makes the same point, but I think there's more to it than that. I just think that too few people recognize what the real name of the people is.
Yehudim, of course,
Yehudim,
that's what I am.
What that
We're
means
Yehudim and, here.
And what Shem actually means in Hebrew.
Well, not only that, but you know, there's another aspect to this, and I just wanted to put this out here. You know, of all the people to go attack, you know, you can walk through, I don't know of any Jewish neighborhoods that are scary to walk through. You understand what I'm saying? These aren't the people that are going to get you. They're not out robbing you.
Oh, don't
you
go down that turn. That's the Jewish neighborhood. You're a Jew down there.
You had Bugsy Siegel and a couple of guys. And after that, they're really kind of few and far between.
In Europe right now is the Jews are raping women by the thousands.
Yeah, right.
No, it's the Muslims, aren't they?
You know, it was the Jews in Russia under Catherine that ran everything because they trusted them.
Yeah.
They were educated. They could count. They could read and write. They could record things, and they trusted them.
Yeah.
I mean,
counting and reading, of course, were the same in Hebrew because the letters are all
over. Of course, there's a number system as well.
But I'm just saying it's all confirmation. I mean, if there's any group of people to run around and hate, why would you pick them?
By the way, what's interesting, too, is that in Hebrew, the numbering system is actually the 10-base counting system that we use today.
Yes.
You know, rather than Roman numerals, where it's a very complicated system of adding, it's of adding and subtracting, and there's both addition and subtraction. The it's numbers 1 through 10, and then 20,
zero,
and yeah, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, and then there is 100, 200, 300, 400, 500, 600, 700, 800. They It's a 10-base counting system,
mm-hmm.
right through the Hebrew alphabet. You know, so the Hebrew alphabet is the basis of what we look at as our numerals in the 10-base counting system.
Well, it'd be the basis of all technology today, actually, and engineering and everything else.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, if you look at computers, computer is on or off. You know, it's a binary system. It's yes or no, on or off, is the nature of a computer. And you look at Yahweh, it's yes or no. You know, are you going to go on the human side or are you going to go on his side? You can't be both positive and negative with Yahweh. So behold, I will bring a flood, a mabul, deluge of overwhelming proportions of water, mayim, upon the region. To destroy Shahad, because this is quid pro quo. It's the same word. The humans there were destructive, and so he is going to. It's quid pro quo. He's going to do to them as they have done to his creation. All related humans, people who are preachers and messengers, in whom a spirit, a block. Was born and lives. From beneath the heavens, all who are related in the region will expire, will perish. Wow. In whom a spirit was born and lives. Well, wow.
These people had the Nesama.
Yeah, and so they, this doesn't, later he will tell us that it's the Nesama human. He eliminated. These people chose to associate with the spirit.
Hasatan.
Yeah, bad choices are made and have been made since the beginning.
Right. So in whom a spirit lives. Wow. So this is now spiritual warfare. They chose the wrong spirit. So, very clear a denunciation here of what was causing them to be so deadly and destructive. Everything that Hasatan touches is about death and destruction and terror and Torahlessness and looting, thieving.
These Nephilim, what does that mean? Those who prostrate themselves. It doesn't mean giants.
Right, religious worship, veneration. What does the Lord want? He wants you to bow down to him.
And wasn't Ishmael's daughter named Naphtali?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what in the world are people thinking?
Prostration, right, which is what became of, Islam's notorious for its prostration prayer.
Yeah, words mean things. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I was explaining what's happening here. These people in this region are going to expire. So, it is the land, this particular area, that these people lived, and it's because they associated with the spirit of Hasatan that they became so cruel. And it goes right back to the pagan religions permeated the mankind from a very long time ago. We've been bad for a long time.
These preachers and messengers, these have to be the people that set themselves up as teachers, right? I mean, that's what they've done.
correct. Yeah. But look how Yahweh is defining this as Eden plus 1,000 years. But look at what mankind grew to become again. Look how merciless Babylon became and Assyria. Look how merciless the Egyptians were. How vicious the Egyptians were. Look how vicious the Greeks were, particularly under Alexander. Look how vicious the Romans were. Look how vicious the Spartans were, and the Carthaginians, and the Aztecs, and the Incas. The Peloponnesian people and the Hawaiian Islands, how vicious they were. You know, look how vicious was Mao's China and Lenin and Stalin's Russia and Hitler's Germany, and how vicious was Woodrow Wilson's America. You know, we haven't changed much, have we?
Yeah. No, it's horrible.
As bad as
look how vicious the Roman Catholic Church was.
George Bush's or Barack Obama's America any better? I would argue we're way worse than we were then.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting argument. Really depends on how you look at the conquest of the Americas and the annihilation and the abuse of the native peoples. And you compare the abuse of the native peoples to what we're doing in the world today, and I'm not sure that one is worse than the other. And you know, you look at how vicious we were in World War I with the spread of the biological agent that killed, you know, a higher percentage of the world's people than did the Black Plague.
You know what astounded me about that show? First of all, Kirk, you said that some figures reach as high as 200 million, which I could almost believe because 1 month in October of just 1 year, it killed 200,000 people in the United States, something that isn't exactly laid out in history class.
This is pretty well.
Right. Yeah, and by the way, it's not told in history class. We didn't report on it because that was the time where the media was essentially owned and controlled.
Yeah, from that point on, probably.
Right, sure. And so we had a department of propaganda that Wilson created, and then he and J.P. Morgan bought the bank, or bought the newspapers, and so it was considered inappropriate.
Just buried. Buried.
For anyone to cover the story. The only reason it's called the Spanish flu is because Spain was not a participant in the propaganda because they weren't a participant in the war, and therefore it was the one place where the press actually wrote about what was happening.
Well, yeah, but there's one other part of this that really, really amazed me, and I did not know this, is that somewhere between 65% and 80% of our troops that were killed in World War I were killed by this plague they weren't even killed by bullets or bombs or mustard gas.
They were in the
plague. A man, created the plague. One that that came from America.
Yeah, that was created purposely to go out and kill a vast
exactly. world. Yeah, exactly. Sure. So, you know, are we worse today? I don't know, man. That's
pages before this.
That's some pretty bad stuff to compare to.
Yeah, I was astonished to hear that. I didn't know that. I was blown away. Wait a minute. They weren't even shot, you mean?
James, the one place I'm going to agree with you on that we're worse today, that Bush's and Obama's America is worse than that, is that while we are, I don't think we're any worse than we were when we were annihilating the native populations or when we were annihilating the world's population back in World War I, our tendency to be deadly today is focused in and around Israel. We're providing Israel's enemies with hundreds of billions of dollars worth of weapons. We're arming and equipping Islamic terrorist organizations who are going to wield their weapons against Israel. And so our belligerence today in supporting and arming and aiding and abetting Israel's enemies is why we got the warning in Isaiah 18. Because man killing his fellow man is the nature of human history. But when you start being deadly and cruel and in aiding and abetting the enemies of Israel, that's when you get the woe. So I think we are worse.
Just to be clear, I wasn't trying to say we were worse. I was just saying we're no better.
I don't know.
Yeah, we are no better today.
I'm not saying we're worse, but we're no better. We're
bad. And in one way, we are worse.
Yeah,
because now
it wasn't until recently that our malfeasance turned to aid and abet those who would destroy Israel.
Well, but if you look at it historically, our actions then created, you know, one of the worst incidents in the world for Israel, and that was we created Nazi Germany, which created the concentration camp and the Holocaust.
Right. Yeah, if it wasn't for George Herbert Walker and Preston Bush,
right,
there wouldn't have been a Nazi Germany. There would have been no brown shirts. There would have been no Adolf Hitler. Would have been no German war machine. Most certainly would not have been Auschwitz, which was to provide labor for the coal mines that were used for gasification for the German war machine. None of that would have happened without American political and banking malfeasance. We were hideous. And, you know, this idea that we're the ones that liberated those camps, well, the camps wouldn't have existed.
Well, we also funded the Gulag system too.
Right.
I mean, seriously,
we got on both sides of that.
A good thing America has done.
It's
on
bizarre.
A global scale. Is there a single good thing we've done? No.
No. No.
No. We give more charity aid.
God bless America.
Yeah, well, we give more charity than does anyone else when there is a disaster. But of course, we're giving.
Yeah, but that's
giving
such
money
a,
we don't have.
Yeah, well, yeah. But also they're giving money to leaders. It's sort of like giving $200 billion, to Africa, and then you look at the fruits of that $200 billion. You wonder where it went, because it ends up being a few nets to keep mosquitoes off people.
Are we? We build all these hospitals for Ebola that were never used.
Whatever, and we know somebody got that money. And it's probably Halliburton.
We sent over hundreds of billions of dollars to Afghanistan, and we wrecked it, and it's a ruin today.
You know, and that brings us to this show, because the one thing this show lacks, you know what it is, guys? It's a commercial.
Well,
and I've actually written one for the Bible Shtick.
The Bible Shtick was it for me, by the way. That was the one that
I know, that's why I came up with the Bible Shtick.
With Bale. By the way, the Bible Shtick really isn't the whole Bible. It's just the Pauline New Testament.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's all
the New Testament.
Wow.
That's all Christians care about.
Yeah, that's all they care about.
And even then, they skip most of it.
Right.
They'll skip over all of the quote-unquote Gospels and go straight to
Paul. There's no part of Matthew that they're going to Matanya. And no part of that they're going to listen to.
Well, see, mine is a disturbing, tangling, stirring up of stew. Okay? It creates a tumult and confusion. It's the Bible Shtick.
And we even named ourselves after the Lord's Elf.
Set up a football commercial, and we'll air it at the end of every show.
I'm going to write one. I'll write one on the bottom.
Do it. I'll put it on so we can air it at the end of every show.
Okay. I'll do it. Just like I did the prayer. I thought that prayer, I still listen to it. I wrote it, and I'm laughing. I had a fever at the time, too. I could barely get it out, but I was laughing. I still laugh when I hear it. I think Richard put it up on YouTube.
Yeah. Why in the hell do Christians carry around that big lug when
80%
of it they think it's spirited and outdated?
Yeah, I know. What a waste.
It reminded me. I actually ended up, I went to my mother-in-law's for dinner last night. They invited me over for my birthday. And, you know, I'm a gracious guy. I enjoyed the dinner, had a great time with family, but they had the Republican debate on in the background. And it got to the point where they were talking about how to deal with the Middle East. And every single one of the candidates, there were, 10 of them on stage, something like that, every one of them has basically the same plan. More guns, more bullets, more bombs.
Right.
Like, they're right there. I told her, Mike, right there is the reason I will not vote for a single one of these people.
Right. Well, those people are representing those people.
That's what needs to happen over there.
Can you imagine representing the moderator here and you're saying, hey, fellas, isn't that what we did to Libya? How did that work out? Fellas, isn't that what we did to Afghanistan? How did that work out? Fellas, that's what we did in Iraq.
Now?
How did that work out? Fellas, isn't that what we did in Yemen? How did that work out? Fellas, isn't that what we're doing in Syria? How did that work out? So why do you want to continue to do the same thing that has just made a complete ruin, made bad situations worse?
Same thing. They all have the same problem. Obama didn't use enough military. That was their problem. Obama didn't use military enough.
When Bush 1 and 2 invaded Iraq, he didn't use enough military?
Oh, they wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Well, first of all, they
have a moderator who would call them on that.
They need a new mantra, which is, we're going to free the hell out of you.
So our problem in Vietnam isn't that we bombed Vietnam and made a bad situation worse, is we didn't bomb them enough.
Yeah, we ran out of Agent Orange.
Until you love us.
Well, what it is, we didn't put enough people in jail in Operation Phoenix, the Phoenix program. You know what that was about? That was all about, could you put half of the people of a country in prison without giving them a trial? That's what the Phoenix Project was.
Yeah.
That's all it was.
There's a, regardless of every other issue, if one of them had come out and said, I am going to pull us out of the Middle East, let them go back to killing themselves, killing each other, like they've done for the last 500 years, regardless of every other political issue, I would consider voting for that person.
Yeah, I would,
because
too.
Because that would be the smartest thing any one of them could have said.
Right.
But not one of them came close to that.
Yeah, you
They're
absolute moron.
All more army, more troops.
Yeah, that's what got us into this problem.
Well, guys, I got to run here, so I'm going to take off, but it's been a pleasure. Okay.
Yeah, the Republican Party is Hamas. All right, fellas.
Are we meeting on Sunday, or are you guys meeting?
Yeah, I haven't gotten the time yet from Scott, but I'm sure he'll send us a note.
Okay. Can I ask you one question before you get away?
Sure.
We talked about that passage of, I'm assuming we're going to do King Saul, correct? Now, we talked about that on the show, and I have lost my notes. I already translated it again personally this week. But,
in terms of the commentary for your program was I wanted to get a enough of a gist of it, so I read it in Hebrew. I just read it through. My notes are in my head, and the two things that stood out strongest was that by choosing governance as opposed to being led by the Torah, that Yahweh says that what they were doing is rejecting Him.
Right. Absolutely.
And I thought that, so You know, it's you can choose your government, you can choose your religion, or you can choose him. So that's where the line was.
All you got out of that, that is a very, very profound statement.
Absolutely. So
you got nothing else out of it but that. It is worth it.
Agreed. Agreed. And the second thing that struck me is how the term mitzvah, which are terms and conditions of a covenant or of the codicils of a relationship, that King Shaul government was going to have their own mitzvah,
right?
Their own terms and conditions. And every government does. They have their own terms and conditions. And so I thought it was just fascinating that he used mitzvah there.
I got that too. Yeah, I got that one.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the first thing that he says that they're going to do is they're going to take your sons and use them along with the means to commit war. It's going to be weapons of war and taking your sons to man these weapons of war. That's the first thing the government
is doing. It is all on the money. I mean, gosh, it's just...
Why is America a superpower? Because we take the sons and have them, and we build weapons of war, and we man the weapons of war with our sons.
And we tax the people like crazy to keep it going.
Right. Correct. Correct.
He had commanded officers, too. Did you notice?
Yes.
Like, it makes sense. Like, you give them to the captains.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, commissioned officers. Yeah, he did. Got to bribe the people. That's what, you know, Muhammad did. You get to keep every 80% of what you steal, you give me 20.
You got to give me 20. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to cover, though, right?
If that's what you're looking to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, you look at the Roman legions. Same deal.
Yeah. You talked, I think it was the first observation show, you talked about, you know, why would God need Paul to come in and change his plan, and, you know, why would he need a man to help? Well, Paul could do one thing God couldn't do.
Yeah.
He could make a plan that appealed to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, God's plan ought to appeal to
Yahweh
ever could.
Yeah, Yahweh didn't design his plan to appeal to massive numbers of people, but only people who are open to and took the time to listen to his plan. Yahweh's plan only appeals to those who know his plan.
Mm-hmm. But his plan couldn't have appealed to everyone without violating his nature.
Right.
Yeah,
that's true. I think it appeals to everyone who actually considers it. It appeals to everyone who considers it. It's just that too few people consider it. And Paul, because Paul's plan is no plan.
Yeah.
Paul's plan is belief. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to know anything. And so that's something that can appeal
to
everybody.
People into that. Belief is easy to convince people of. You can get a lot of people on your side with belief.
What does every politician run on?
Belief.
Yeah, trust me, belief. Belief in the promise of a better tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right. That's the whole concept of religion. It's the mother's milk of religion and politics.
And it's the one thing Yahweh can't do.
Yep. Hope and belief. Yeah. And Yahweh's not going to present any hope or anything that isn't based on knowledge and understanding and response. And, you know, to know requires time. To understand requires thinking. And to respond requires doing
things. He doesn't want people to engage.
Right.
Yep.
But Paul in Christianity, you don't have to know anything. You don't have to understand anything. You don't have to do anything.
Just some ominous sense of belief. I believe.
Right. I believe.
It's real easy.
And a God that you do not know, a God who authored the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, which you do not like, is going to save you so you can spend eternity with him. And, oh, by the way, he wants you to worship him.
Well, now, see, for them, it isn't even the author of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms.
Yeah, but apparently he doesn't care if you know his name.
That's the dead God.
Yes,
you know, the author of the Torah, that's the dead God. He don't exist anymore. He's, you know, gone.
That's called
an
Old Testament.
God.
Yeah, that's why it's called the Old Testament.
Marcia,
but, you know, it's
right.
So interesting, of course, that Christianity, according to Christians, their God died.
Yeah.
Yep.
Who killed him?
Oh, man killed God.
I find it so funny that if you present outright, word for word, Marcion's belief in that the God of the Old Testament died, and there's this new God of salvation. They will.
And he died too. And he died too, by the way.
But if you
and every year he does again.
If you walk them through it, every single step of it, they believe. You tell it to them outright, they will reject it. You know, just like Marcion was, condemned as a heretic. But if you go step by step by step, they will agree with every single thing he said.
Right, of course.
Well, you know, there was a Greek, there was a little Greek island or on the mainland where they used to reenact that every year. They would select a king, and he got to be real king for a year, and then they would fight to the death, and the next one would come, and they would always handicap him some way so he could die. Or what they found is after a while, some of them got real powerful, and they decided they could substitute someone else to fight for him and die.
Look at the in the Incas, that you had to pull the heart out of a victim and offer this this beating heart to their bloodthirsty god. God was only satisfied with death. You got to die to please God. You got to kill to please God. Yeah. Ooh, yuck. All right, fellas. So
okay. I'll talk at you Sunday.
Okay.
Talk to you guys later.
Sure. Look forward to it.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Shalom.
Shalom.